Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We just need you to give us your name, your birth date, and permission to record you.
You got the permission.
All right. And name?
My name is Edward Robin.
All right.
I was born March the 9th, 1926.
And when you think of coastal Louisiana, I think that if I remember right, you've been in the oyster business.
Yeah.
How long?
All my life. Since 1947 when I started the business.
Now, was your dad involved in oysters before that, Mr. Brown?
I don't know. When I came out the Navy, I was in World War II. I spent most of my time in the Pacific. When I came out the Navy, I was the one who started the business. Mm-hmm. And after 12 years that I was in the business alone, I took my dad and one of my brothers in business. And then for so many years, I took a couple of my other brothers in with me and my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, I turned the business over to my sons. That's running the business today.
Well, the people we've been talking to have talked mostly about the trapping end of it and shrimping. How many people were involved in the oyster business in your part of the parish when you started?
When I first started off, there must have been maybe about three Slavonians that came from Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the first from the parish that ever started fooling with oysters. Mm-hmm. And when I first started fooling with oysters, we started catching oysters by tong,
right.
Tonging them.
Now these were native reefs, or were you seeding?
No, reefs? No, that was natural reefs, and they were mostly in shallow water,
mm-hmm.
and also picking up oysters by hand.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get your oyster tongs?
Made.
You made them yourself.
Right. In fact, it's just like two rakes, just like the rakes that you mm-hmm. rake the grass. Well, you combine the both of them together, mm-hmm. all right? And that's what you rake them.
Mm-hmm.
You get so much feet of water, you pick, break them up and put them in your boat. And after you get so many in your boat, then you take and you cull them. It's your hatchet. You take the big oyster, you knock the little ones off, throw them back overboard, and naturally you sell the big oyster. The little oyster that you threw back overboard, that was for next year.
Right.
So here come along some guy with a little smarter. He designed the oyster drudge. The oyster drudge is made in the A-frame with teeth,
mm-hmm.
and naturally dragged on the bottom. Well, when we first started off, we had to pull them up by hand with a rope.
Mm-hmm.
Pull it up on the deck, dump it, and then do the same thing. Take the big oyster, cut the little ones off, and throw it back overboard. And then, like I said, that little one that you threw overboard, that's what you went back next year for.
The oyster drudge had a bag in the back.
Right.
What oysters to go in.
The bottom, the drag, the oyster drudge, it's got teeth.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. but in like the, on the bottom of it is made by rings of iron, but on that iron is what you got rope tied to it. Mm-hmm. The reason why they developed, it took time to develop them to come out with that. It didn't just come overnight. The reason why that the rings on the bottom was iron, because if you made it all out of rope, it wouldn't last too long because the oyster would chew it up.
Right.
But that's the way it went. That they started. We started mm-hmm. off with rope,
mm-hmm.
but then somebody else got smarter, and he made the rings on the bottom out of steel,
mm-hmm.
and you attach the rope in the back like it's a bag, and that's where it got more improved. But then, like I said, them days you had to pull them up by hand.
Now, was your boat wooden? Your first boats, were they wooden?
Yeah, it was a skiff. A little skiff about maybe 15 feet.
Hmm.
Made out of wood, not of cypress, naturally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
No motor.
No motor.
No motor.
So how did you get to the lease?
Most of them, either by paddling or by oaring.
Right.
If you had a bigger boat, you had an oar. Oh, well, it's a paddle, one on each side, and you have to row it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or you would push pull with a push pull or paddle.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got bigger boats. Well, they got a little bigger. No motor, sail.
All right.
That's the way the sailboats, where the sailboats come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we used to drudge then.
Did you use a sailboat?
Yeah.
Where did you buy your sails?
It was made. You make them yourself out of a kind of sheet of. That's when you started off.
Canvas, huh?
And then later you went into the canvas because we didn't know what canvas was. But the first sail was made out of sheets. That's all we knew.
Uh-huh.
Then you had the one-cylinder motor.
And then comes the one-cylinder motor. We call it a donkey, huh?
Yeah, right.
And that, we were getting bigger, you know, we were getting smarter. So naturally, wherever you find a reef, say this is the reef, you'd have a cane. So you shove it right, you try to find the head of the reef. You shove a cane and you keep going around and around that cane. See?
Right.
Now, when you don't catch any more, then you move to another reef and put the cane down there. Now this reef here, you wouldn't touch this reef, part of the reef here until next year. Because you threw all the little ones back
over.
So now, here the donkey comes in, all right? And shoot. That's when they start picking it up with the donkey.
Mm-hmm.
You're picking up the drudge. Now you're not picking it up by hand. You have what we call a nigger head on the end of that donkey, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So you wrap the rope around the nigger head, and look, that's easier now, huh? So then it starts to get more moderate.
So with the motor, you're able to cover more reefs per day? I mean, it helps you get in and out.
Oh, yeah, it helps you, yeah.
So how much more were you able to do a day with the motor?
Oh, man, it's just like, well, you can imagine, let's put it this way. If you walk it, and then you learn how to run, how fast would you get to your destination? So that's the same way with your motor. But, you know, before you had to sail or paddle, now, man, you got a donkey now, man.
Now, when you were involved or you heard stories about the sailboats, did the oystermen live at their leases because they couldn't get back and forth quickly? Or did they live at the end of the road? I mean, it's a long way sometimes to a lease.
Yeah, well, no, you have to stay out there until you made your load, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would take maybe a couple of days or so, huh? That's when they came in and they said that oysters is only good with the month of August.
Right.
The reason for that is because it was cold months,
mm-hmm.
And that's why. Today, no. Today, everything is much more moderate. Mm-hmm. Everything now today is hydraulic. Mm-hmm. The only thing that has never been improved, you still got to take that big oyster and cull a little dog there. There ain't nothing that you can do about it.
And you got to dump.
Outside of that, everything else has improved.
And you got to dump the drudge. You got to dump the oysters out.
And then you start getting more moderate, all right? So now you're shoveling back, huh?
Yeah.
You have to get out there and shovel back. So you load your boat up, shovel back. Then you go to your destination and you start culling it out, all right? That's more improvement. Today, we got refrigeration on our boat.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out there and you can spend couple of days and no problem. As long as you got your refrigeration on. Now, you don't shovel back no more, okay? You pump it with water. Like if we gotta go big, the way we come out with it, that we put so many boats to make sacks. That's when you fish in a wild reef. You take them, we put so many boats to make sacks. And we take and put two or three boats to big. And that's the last, when I got off the boat, I was 75. And that was the last thing that year that I was doing. All I was doing, pumping them off, it would take me about 12 to 15 hours to load my boat up. It would take me about 2 hours to pump them off.
Now that's the ones you're culling?
That's when you bed.
That's when you bed.
Okay.
And when you're culling, no. When you're culling, that's a different crew. It's only me and another guy that would bed. That's all I needed on there. But when you're culling now, you got about four men on the boat. You got two on each drudge. And you got coming over and they're culling all the time, culling.
So there's a dredge on both sides of the boat?
You got one on each side. And it's on the bottom. And not just anybody knows how to drudge.
That's right.
You got to let so much chain out. If you leave too much chain out, you're gonna catch more mud than anything. So you gotta set that drudge right where it would just be right on top of the arches. And naturally, when you're picking up, you're washing. All right. If you let too much chain out, it's gonna go further back, and you're gonna catch mud and arches, mostly mud.
Right, mostly mud.
So it's a trick in setting that chain.
That's right.
That's the nick of it. You got to set that chain right. And then, let's get back to planting orchids. Nature performs a funny thing. You can take this reef here and plant orchids on it, and it'll produce an orchid maybe all this size, single. Maybe 500 feet or more. All bunching. It's something that you don't know. And what it really is, the current. Mm-hmm. You got to find a place to bed your orchard. You got to find a hard bottom. Say you're going to start off, all right? You better find a hard place to bed it. And if you throw your orchard in soft mud, they're going to sink. Four orchards where it's hard and the bottom is hard, it's clay mud. Mm-hmm. Clay mud is hard. You cannot plant orchards in sand neither. Mm-hmm. Because the grain of sand will get in the orchard and kill it. That's what kills the orchard when the hurricane comes. When the hurricane comes and that water comes, the grain of sand gets in it and that's what kills it.
Now, where did you get your ice when you were, before refrigeration, you had to have ice. Where did that ice come from?
Never had no ice.
Never had it. So you came in every day?
No, you wouldn't come in every day. You'd come in maybe every second day until it got hot. When it got warm, then you had to come in every day. It's like right now. Now they got laws out. When you hit to that reef now, you gotta log it down. Every lease has got a number. You gotta log it down, the number of the lease where you're at, when you started, when you quit, how many sacks you picked up. How long did you drudge, and where did you get when you got to your destination to discharge? You better have it logged down, and you better have it right.
Now, what's the weight of a sack? How do you determine a sack?
It's a measurement. They got a regular standard measurement, and the measure, it's a wire basket, and it's just judged about 100 pounds. That's the weight. It's judged about 100 pounds. That's a sack. Now today they got what they call little sacks, which is half of that. So out of one big sack, they make two little sacks. And what they're doing now, these little sacks that they're doing, is mostly for half shell, serving Andre. Over the ball. Big sacks is going to the plant where they open an oyster sack.
Now, where's the closest plant that you might send oysters?
We're sending ours to Biloxi, Gulfport.
It's that Mississippi connection again.
You said now, when you first started out, where were you sending your oysters?
We used to bring them right here in Violet. Well, at a certain time of the year, then they had lots of oysters. Violet Canal, Violet Factory was the only one that shucked oysters. Mm-hmm. And it shucked oysters for years. Mm-hmm. And then it stopped. Right now, there's no factory that I know of that's canning oysters. But they are opening oysters on a half shell, but they are putting them in gallons.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not canning them as of that I know of.
Now, one of the things Carl and I have had a hard time finding are cans. The original oyster can with the label. Because it gives us the story of where these canneries were located. We know there was one at Happy Jack many years ago.
Right.
There was one that we believe there was one at Nestor many years ago.
Yeah, well.
So we're always interested in labels and cans because they tell us the community that had the cannery.
Right.
Because at one time, before the counter trade, canned oysters were the way to go. Because we didn't have refrigeration.
That's right. Right.
Well, people just
the reason why they had that in Happy Jack, because that's where they had the oyster fishermen over there. We was here, and the only factory that they had was Violet. That's why we came. I mean, our boats would come here. We couldn't afford to take all our oysters from here and bring them to Happy Jack.
Gotcha. Sure.
It was too far. And
what about Lopez? Lopez? Factory they had, or then
they had one in Carnarvon.
They didn't have one in Point Lass, Lopez factory.
In Point Lass they had one, but we had one here right there in Carnarvon.
Oh yeah, they had one in Carnarvon. Yeah,
you had Calais, one there.
Calais.
Well, that was close to two because the oyster fisherman that was fishing in Plaquemine Parish, and was fishing in Saint Bernard waters. It was closer to come in over here by Carnarvon and unload. Mm-hmm. And like us that was in Wyclowski, Hopedale, and Lake Bourne, our closest was here in Violet Packing Co.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever take any oysters to Biloxi or Gulfport?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they had a factory in going to Biloxi. On Highway 90, they had a factory there. That was the last factory. When Violet closed, that place, they'd open up. We hauled. That was the last place we hauled.
And have you ever heard of the Dunbar, Lopez, and Decade companies? Do you recognize those names?
Dunbar, yes, yes. Yeah, I remember they had a company there.
Yep. Well, we know there was a cannery between Slidell and the Mississippi border on a railroad in a place called Dunbar. We know there was one at the Rigolets because we found information. So there were lots of canneries that were functioning at one time, and clearly they've consolidated down. Almost all of them had rail, so your railroad out to Shell Beach was really important. But I think what we're asking is if you see a can with a label, let us know.
Well, look,
now they got, I've seen in a couple of places, I've seen where they got cannery oysters. And, but to be honest with you, I think most of the cannery oysters that you see today are from overseas.
Yes, that's right. But, oh, yeah. But the cans were really important. We were doing some work and then we were looking for an oyster can from Homa. Found one. It was on eBay. I was bidding on it. The bid went to about $125 for a rusty can. I decided my wife might not be too pleased if I spent that much money on a rusty can. It sold for $2,275, and the important thing to remember, it took two people. So,
if you've got some,
they're probably worth much
more. Don't throw them away.
And you'll appreciate this because, you know, talking about recycle, when you had a can, you cut out the bottom and put over your tomato plants.
Mm-hmm.
They're really hard for us to find, and we've been looking for 7 years. So just keep that in mind. Those kinds of things.
I'm sure you can't find that.
No. It's just like your rake or your early oyster tongs are very hard for us to find. We just want a photograph.
Oh, they got that.
I doubt if you would ever find any more. Maybe, but we have the first box. I got one in my house right now. The first box that we made with our name and the label and everything on it, with the boat painted on, where we used to put the oyster box oysters. That's where the box oysters, when we came out with that, it's oysters on the half shell. We got one box at my house, I got one.
Now, where did you get the boxes?
There's a company that made boxes. The old man, I think the original owner is dead. I think he died. But I think the company, they're still making boxes or box office, which we don't use no more. We use now like onion sacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why onion sacks, because more air can go through it when you put them in the cooler.
Mm-hmm. Not coffee sacks.
No.
Onions.
No. Well, all right. Big sacks. Big sacks is coffee sacks too.
That's 100 pounds.
That's 100 pounds.
Right.
Now the little sacks is about 50 pounds. Because it's two little sacks to big sacks.
They're red. They're
but
red.
They are the onion sacks, that's what it really is.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because more air can go through when you put them in the cooler and it's much more easier to handle. And less expense.
And do you remember any stories, and these are going back a long time, when the cannery was on a barge?
On a barge? I think they might have had one that tried it out in Plaquemine across the river. Because the tacos, the salonis that came across from overseas, they got strong into the oyster business. They were the ones that really got strong into it. And it took years before the locals got into it. For that reason, it was hard work. And everybody knew something about shrimping. But they didn't know too much about oysters. And like I said, oysters was hard work.
Yeah,
shrimping wasn't that hard work.
Oysters
is hard work.
Well, we have found the reference to three barges, each weighing 49 tons. So there's got to be some regulation that if you go to 50, never 48, never 50. And we think, because of where we found the information, that they were actually mobile canneries. We suspect one was towed in behind Grand Isle. And it makes sense because
I would say about that dairy, that's what I'm trying to say. I think that they tried something out. I don't know if it was successful. It was in Grand Isle. I know it was across the river from us. Over here but in St. Lawrence Parish, not to my knowledge.
All right.
No.
Now, in every business, there are good years and bad. between 1947 and today, can you target certain times that were real good and certain times that were real bad for the oyster industry here?
What made the oysters real bad is when they had hurricanes. Mm-hmm. When they had hurricanes, that's what made it bad. But within the year, you could come back on it again after hurricane, all right? And what killed the oyster during the hurricane is when the sand would come over the oyster, off the ground, and the sand would be in the oysters, and that would be it. And then it would cover them up. And then by length of time and bad weather, and they get rough, well, it washed that sand off of the oyster, and that's how we come back again. Or, like we learned, get on a reef after a hurricane, get on a reef of a reef and take the bag off and keep going round and round and round and round. And especially when the wind was blowing and the rough as I don't know what, we wanted that because we'd go around and we'd be disturbing the water and that sand would be drifting elsewhere.
I didn't know that. I didn't know the sand came off.
Huh?
I thought the sand made a pearl.
Sand does make a pearl, one grain of sand.
Yeah.
But if any amount get in it, no.
No.
That's a killer.
Now, if you weren't fishing oysters, what were you doing? Or did you fish oysters every month, every day?
Well, I was in the seafood business. I bought everything, whatever came to the dock. If it was a shrimp come in, I bought it. If it was a crab come in, I bought it. If a fish come in, I bought it. Whatever came in the line of seafood, I bought it.
Now, where was your market? Where did you sell it? Because it's all fresh.
Most of it, all right. When I got bought plenty, let's say, all right. I used to handle had 2 trailer loads of shrimp a day. All went to Violet. And then I used to go to Violet Packing Company, and I used to go to Scrimmetti's across the river. I handled had 4 trailer loads of oysters a day.
That would go to Violet too.
Some of it is going to Violet. Some of them was going to plants where they was opening them and putting them in gallons.
Okay.
Now, the hurricanes really hurt us, but it didn't hurt us as bad as BP. BP really hurt us bad. We lost over 80% of our oyster ground to BP. The chemical that they threw in the water to dissolve the oil, it killed the oyster, and anything around it, it killed it. Then the little oyster, the spat, would not stick on it. All the oysters that they had, but they call them black bait, because the name of it was Nigger Lake, all
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's still the silver name thing. That was solid oysters. Mm-hmm. Today, it is solid oyster shells. And nothing spat on. There's no spat on it at all. So what we're finding out now, and we're just doing this, we're just doing learning more and more about that in these last couple of years, that BP stopped. We are planting rocks.
Right.
And gravel. Mm-hmm. That's what they're sticking on now.
Mm. So you're having to create your own hard bottom.
Yeah, that makes that.
Yeah, that's what we're doing now. We are pushing anywhere from 300 to 400 tons of rocks a dig. We're pushing them out there by barges, plus with our boats. We got barges that holds I don't know how many tons. And we're pushing it with our barges, and the same way, come back. We don't have to shovel them over.
Or pump.
Huh? We're pumping them all.
Well, after the oil spill, I know that many people in the oil industry have to lay off people, workers. Were companies here able to bring those people back? I mean, you're talking about, I think the concern at the time, right after the spill, was that these people, once they got another job, would never come back to the oil industry.
It hurt quite a bit. Like I said, we lost 80% of our oil to ground.
Right.
All right. Right now, we only got 3 boats that's sacking oysters right now. The rest of them are tied to the wall.
How many altogether?
We had 8 boats.
Okay.
So now we're coming back. All right. Before, when you take an oyster from a little oyster that, say, the spat would hit on its shell, it would take anywhere to 3 to 4 years before that oyster would be market size. Mm-hmm. Now, we're finding out just recently that we got some reefs that we made, we put the rocks on it, and we just went, because we checking it ever so often. Right now, we went and checked it, and we got some oysters that's on one rock. It's 1 year old. This one comes in September. Mm-hmm. They're just about this size, and they got anywhere from 8, 10, or 15 oysters on one rock.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the way we're looking at it, within another year, 2 years, we'll be able to cull them and have market size.
That'd be good.
Because of the rot. But not all of the reefs that we've been doing that to, because the reefs that we're doing, we're planting rocks on top of reefs that we own, and we're building them up. But not all of them reefs are active, like I'm telling you. It's a funny thing.
Hmm.
You might be 500 feet away from them. This in here is catching like I don't know what. 500 feet from here, not catching at all.
Hmm.
But what comes in with that too now is the current. The more current that there is where you plant the orchard, you try to find a place that's got a lot of current. That's the catch.
Current, yeah. A lot of current. You need a lot of current.
Well, what you both have talked a lot about today is change and the way things were, as opposed to the way things are today. And I'd like to get both of you to, Don?
I think if you can just...
I'd like for you to basically go back to as far back as you can remember here, and then look at today and tell me, what is the difference? Look at...
Yeah, the difference today is just like day and night, like I tell you, I mean, from... You just look from sailing, and now you got motorboats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know the big improvement that is?
Mm-hmm.
All right, another big improvement is from picking it up by hand, and now you got everything hydraulic.
Mm-hmm.
Big. Point. Another deal is shoveling back. Now you got a pump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't beat that.
But it's
the only thing that we got to do, like we've done it from the beginning, we're still doing it, is culling the oysters.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't no machine invented
right
to knock them little ones off yet, save the big one.
Well, one of the things you kept talking about was how people helped each other
back in an earlier time.
Is that still true here?
Down the island, they used to help each other plenty. But the people moved out, and the one that didn't move out died. You know, they only got 2 people at the island, my Uncle Alan Perez, and I think Paul Serene stayed down there sometime, and Thomas Gonzalez, he stayed down there, 3 of them. Thomas fishes crab, and he makes sure she has crab too, you see.
But in hard times, do people still pull together here?
Oh.
Yeah, some.
Some people pull together. I know all my friends, they help me.
Now you see making soft crabs too. Making soft crabs is a catch. Mm-hmm. You gotta know what you're doing when you make soft crabs. But it's work. It's every 3 hours you gotta be checking them boxes 7 days a week.
Every 3 hours.
When them crabs starts to get soft and they change, a crab goes through 3 different stages before it gets soft. Now not every crab becomes soft.
That's right.
There's certain crabs that become soft. And you gotta know when you look at that crab, you're gonna know if it can be soft. First when you catch it, it's a green crab we green call crab. It. Mm-hmm. Mean, eat, bite, anything. Mm-hmm. Then about every 3 days you got a discard because it changes from a green crab to what we call a pink crab. Mm-hmm. Now he bites.
Yeah.
And he eats, but not as much. Now, after becoming a pink crab, he becomes a buster.
A buster.
Now he'll bite you, but he can't hurt you, and he don't eat you. And then within a couple of 3 days, that's when he starts to shed. Now, all of this time, you got to be discarding and boxing.
That's right.
You got to separate that green crab from the pink crab, from the buster crab. You cannot leave them together.
No.
If you leave them together, when it gets soft, the green crab and the pink crab are going to eat the soft crab.
You see, the pink crab, you look behind it, I call it the ear, the flapper, the one on the back. You look like that, you see the little white line? The white line? Okay, that's a green crab. Okay. Then you see the pink line. Well, that's a pink crab. Then you see that little crack right in the corner, right over there, a little bitty crack, that's a buster. Then you put them in a shedding box. You put the buster in the shedding box, the green crab in the green crab box, and all that. You got to check them every, like you said, every day, every day, every day, every day.
And when they come out the shell, a crab comes out the back of the shell.
Back of the shell.
The shell opens up, and it comes out the back.
It comes out the back, yeah.
Everything on that crab is empty.
Everything.
His eyes, his lungs, everything. When he leaves that shell, it's just a shell.
Everything.
That's how it gets big.
You can take the shell and do that with it, crush it. They ain't got a bit of meat in it.
If you see the crab, if you watch him, you never done that. That's amazing. That's something you all ought to see. See the crab, when he comes out that shell, that's how he gets big.
That's how he grows.
If you'd say, no, he didn't come out that shell. He's almost twice the size.
Well, you see,
a lot of people say, oh no, he didn't come out that shell.
You see,
that's how he gets big.
He busts out. He comes out, and it cracks. And then the shell, the top of the shell comes up and it does this. You look at the joints are doing this in the crab. Doing this, doing this, doing this. I can go show you some of that right now, Chin, if you want to go see.
My.
It's amazing. That you all ought to see. He's coming out. When he's coming ready to come out, he's coming out. He's coming fast. It's just like a lady, you know, we're having birth. Mm-hmm. Same thing. I'm talking it. It's in the same procedure.
Right.
Now, the one thing I haven't heard anybody talk about are turtles.
I don't know nothing about turtles.
That's okay. That's okay. I didn't expect that. That's fine.
I know that they ate.
Turtles to you, nobody has ever made a living fishing turtles because they never had that many turtles. The most turtles that ever were sold is swamp turtles.
Yeah.
They catch them in the swamps, in the marsh. Yeah. And that's the ones we call snapping turtles.
Snapping turtles, they got a long tail.
They were bad, they bad.
Oh, they bite.
Oh, they bad, those are bad. And they got a law on the other turtles.
They bite. They bite you. The only time you leave go, somebody touch him in the back like that, he open him up.
What, honey?
Wow.
Just like an alligator.
Of course.
Hey, Hey.